I'm here with my dear friend, Rabbi David Smith. I'm in his lovely home with his amazing family, and we're just kind of having a fireside chat. We're just kind of talking like friends talk, you know, like we are 150 years old and we just having a conversation over the past 150 years and what happened. But we're coming up with some really amazing thoughts just about life, about faith, about what's going on in our society right now, about race, about you know, the struggle with race and society, about Jewish people, about Black people, about government, and some really interesting things, you know, just came to mind that we were talking about, that I want to bring you all into our conversation, just about where we are right now as a people, because right now I believe that we are across the universe in a deep state of need, and what we need is not really what we think we need. We really need a way out of this, I call it this present darkness, because I believe that we've gotten into a situation that's so dark and so dismal that we don't even know that we're there. And we were in a better place collectively before. And I'm not talking about, you know, just 60 years ago or 80 years ago. I'm talking about the state of mind that we were in before. Is different than the state of mind that we're in now, because right now, for many people, it seems like we're in a trance and that we don't really have any choice and we can't make any real decisions for ourselves. So everybody in society is doing the same thing, and anybody that deviates from that thing that everybody's doing then becomes, you know, the bad person. And so everybody has to do exactly what everybody does. And we have to stay that course, because otherwise something's wrong with us. And so I wanted to kind of open up with that whole concept about, you know, what in the world is going on? You've got all the answers, man. So you got to tell me, what in the world is going on right now?
Well, you know, really, really, God has all the answers, and God gifts us with the insights to see what's going on. But, you know, mentioned earlier about the darkness, and there's an expression in Hebrew called Cheshek Kofel Mechupal, which means a darkness that's doubled and redoubled. And the Baruch Rebbe explains that the concept of darkness that's doubled and redoubled is the darkness is so great, so strong, that a person is sitting in the darkness and he thinks that he's in the middle of the light.
Wow.
He doesn't even recognize anymore that there's darkness. That's how dark the darkness is. And that's what we were talking about, the state of slavery that man can volunteer for. I was telling you earlier about how did the Jews become slaves in Egypt? Paro, who was the king of Egypt, he came to the Jewish people and he came to the old Egyptian. He said, we should make a national day of service and show our dedication to the country, and we'll do public service and we'll build infrastructure projects. And that's in fact what they did. The first day Paro came and he was there and he participated. And the next day he didn't show up, but the Egyptians did, and the Jewish people did. And by the third day, a lot of the Egyptians didn't show up, but the Jews were still showing up. And then by the fourth day, it was mainly just the Jewish people. Before you knew it, the Jewish people were continuing to show up every day for this national service and to prove their dedication to the national service. And then eventually, they were the national service. They were providing the manpower, and the building blocks for the Egyptian civilization was being built. And that slavery, the fascinating thing is that slavery was voluntary. It was 100% voluntary. But what we're discussing now, the insight, that when you are in a state of becoming enslaved, you don't even realize what's happening because it's so incremental. And I want to suggest that by the time when you become a slave through voluntariness, through volunteering for each one of the steps, it's very difficult to get out because you don't even see it as slavery anymore. You're like, I have everything I need. I'm taken care of. I have everything. And that all the stuff is given to you for free as a slave become something you don't want to give up.
So you talk about the Jews under and you know, of course, for those that says the word in a very Anglicized way, Pharaoh, right? And so it would, when they were under the autocratic rule of Pharaoh, they didn't recognize that they were becoming. They were becoming, and I kind of like that terminology, that slavery is not something that just happens. It's something that we become because we don't resist it, because we don't know that we're in it. And so you talk about the Jewish people being a part of a becoming of slavery by not recognizing where they are. But then let's talk about Black people who were brought from Africa, enslaved in chains, shackles and chains. The first generation, I always talk about this, of Blacks from Africa. Many of them were killed. Many of them were destroyed because they would, you know, they had a Negro spirituals. Before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go home to see my Lord. Hallelujah. That was a Negro spiritual, because they weren't going to be slaves. But then every generation after that, first initial enslaved Africans, they became more, they became weaker, they became more docile, they became more submissive, to the point that today most Black people don't even recognize that they're slaves. Let me tell you why they don't know that they're slaves. Because you know why? Because they're educated. They're educated. They went to college. So that de-slaves them, if that's a word. I'm just making that word up, right? Or it declassifies their slave status, because, you know, they went to the historically Black colleges, or, you know, or for some Blacks that are, you know, real slaves, they'll say, well, I've got the opportunity to go to the Harvards and the Yales and the Princetons, and that totally makes me not a slave. And so they become acclimated to a system where they don't even understand that all they have really become is overseers to a plantation that they're not running. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Well, it makes sense, because education is the key to controlling the human spirit. Education is the key, and getting person into a mindset of having to belong and wanting to belong with something else that's foreign to them is the key purpose of modern education, secular education, because the Lubavitch Rebbe explains that the fundamental underlying principle of physical slavery is spiritual slavery.
Wow.
In order to be freed from physical slavery, you first have to be freed from spiritual slavery. Spiritual slavery includes wanting to belong, includes wanting something for nothing. Getting something free is a form of spiritual slavery. It's not a gift. It is a getting something for nothing. That's spiritual slavery. It's those are the idols that people worship, wanting to the idol worship of experts. That's an idolatry. If people come into your culture and they say you could become an expert, it will take you and give you an education so you could become one of the experts, and then you could be worshipped as part of the system, the disease of expertise, or as someone said, the current plague of expertitis. Is this
expertitis?
This is the challenge we face. So we first have to have spiritual freedom in order to have physical freedom. And I think it's so interesting you're talking about the Black slaves.
Yeah.
That those first people who actually said they would rather die than be a slave, they had the real American spirit. Wow. Because the real American, Patrick Henry said, "Give me liberty or give me death."
Right.
Now, he did not say, "Give me liberty or give me death," unless death is caused by coronavirus,
right,
in which case I prefer to have slavery so that I don't die of coronavirus.
Wow.
He said, "Give me liberty or give me death." And this is what these Black slaves had, that attitude, and they paid the price. Those are the heroic examples of how a person is supposed to be. That's the choice he's supposed to make. He's supposed to say, "I refuse to be a slave." And realize in every time and every place, we always have a choice. The route to slavery is paved with incremental steps of saying, "I have no choice."
Wow.
And whenever we say we don't have a choice, I have to do A or B, and I don't have a choice because only B looks like the better option, I have to do B, I don't have a choice, then we know that it's a false dichotomy, it's a falsehood. Because we've taken God out of the picture. Whenever we bring God into the picture, there are always many, many options. A and B is never a true choice. That's never the true options. There's right. always many options. But when we allow other people to control our thinking, or we get stuck in our own rules we've made. We say, well, I have to do this or this. I don't like this, B, A, so I'm going to do B. That is a lie, and that's the beginning of slavery. Because once we made that choice, we make another choice, and we keep going against our own internal principles, then we are demoralizing ourselves, and demoralization is the hallmark of a willing slave. They are willing to be enslaved because they're demoralized and they no longer feel the ability to speak up for themselves. They no longer feel the ability to stand upright as a dignified human being who's created in God's image.
So I'm loving this. But, I mean, you brought up coronavirus and this whole, you know, pandemic going around the world and people that are willingly submitting to government mandates rather than resisting government mandates, particularly since they are not confounded by evidence, none whatsoever, but people by and large are co-signing for every single thing that governors are saying, governors with no medical training, no health training, because I don't want to just say medical training, because a medical practitioner goes to school to give people medicine. It's pretty obvious. And so we're also talking about naturopathics. We're talking about chiropractors. We're talking about anybody that provides health services to people. Most of the governors don't have this training. And so they're giving mandates to people, and people out of fear or even out of a slavery mindset are not resisting because they don't feel that they have a choice. The Bible says that God said to the people, choose you this day whom you will serve. Will it be God or will it be mammon? God gives us a choice. So how is it that God gives us a choice, but man says we have no choice, or we have one choice or two choices, when from what you're saying, that's not even logical, that there's always many choices?
Right. Well, God gives us many choices, and he's always lovingly supporting us and making the right choice. When we think that we have to give into slavery because something bad is going to happen to us, we've lost sight of reality that while it's tragic that a black man was killed for wanting to be free, but he didn't become a slave. He remained a free person, and he spiritually remained a free person. That's an honorable way to live life, and that's an honorable way to die.
Right.
When a person becomes a slave, he loses the honor of his own life, and he loses the honor of his death.
But think about it. You're going somewhere with that. Think about it, right? So many people are there. That's where so many people live, right? I'm that dude, everybody, that I'd rather be dead before I'm anybody's slave. I'm not going to do it, right? I'm outspoken. Everybody that knows me, I'm going to speak my mind. I'm going to stand for what I believe. And if you don't like it, I love you, but I really don't care, right? I'm going to stand for what I know is right. And so I'm not going to be a slave, but I'm really an anomaly. Because there's so many slaves that want to be slaves, and they don't recognize anything that you're talking about. So I mean, when we talk about the systems that government gives us, you know, or that are set up for government to give us this or to give us that, social systems, whatever it is, my personal belief is that they are established for the sole purpose of keeping people in slavery. I completely believe that. And if you don't do what we say, if you don't stay committed to our program, we'll take everything away from you. You see what I'm saying? I mean, like, for example, in my state, our governor, you know, threatened, well, if you don't do what we say, we're gonna shut your business down. Now, just think about this concept, right? Whatever the business is, let's say that it's a restaurant that has a bar, right? And the guy has a family. Let's say that he has a wife and five or six children to support. He's supporting his family off of the restaurant. And then, you know, because you don't perform the function in your restaurant that the governor, who doesn't even support your restaurant, thinks that you're supposed to do, he says, well, we're going to send people in there, right? The slaves that work for the state, to shut you down. And they do it because they're being paid by the slave master to actually shut you down. And then out of fear, you comply. Like, what are the options when you are being or seemingly being forced to do something, and everybody around you is doing it. You see what I'm saying? And so you feel like an oddball when you don't do it, but everybody else is doing it.
So, you know, that's why we need the truth of the Torah. We need truth of God's wisdom in the world to be able to give us the examples of what life is like as a loner. You have to be willing to be a loner. You know,
I love that.
We see that Abraham was the first Jew. He was actually born and he was raised in a cave by his mother because his father, Terach, was an advisor to the king, Nimrod, who was one of these totalitarian people that wanted to rule the entire world and enslave everybody. And he then created hospitals for birthing centers for women to give birth in so that all the boys could be killed because his astrologers had told him that there was going to be a threat rising to his dominion from a boy who was going to be born around that time. And Terach, Abraham's father, did not want his son, his wife was pregnant, didn't want the baby to be killed. So he did not send his wife to the birthing center, did not send his wife to the hospital. He kept her at home, and then she gave birth. And when the police came, because they knew that his wife was pregnant, when Nimrod's police came and said, "Where's the baby?" He says, "I'm not giving you the baby." So they went back to Nimrod, the big king, and they said, "What should we do?" And the police said, "Well, go get him." Meanwhile, Terach had sent his wife and this newborn baby, had sent them to a cave in the hill mountains, and said, "You'll have to stay there for a number of years." And that's where Abraham was raised, in a cave. Because you have to recognize that the ability to think clearly, the ability to think independently, comes from being independent of all the things that tie us and bind us into wanting to sacrifice what we really are in order to pay the price of admission to other people's societies.
So then to talk about paying the price, who in society now wants to pay the price for anything? I mean, or have we been indoctrinated into a society where everybody wants something for nothing? Like, because that whole concept, when I was a kid, my dad used to teach me about that. He was an amazing man. He's, you know, God rest his soul. But he taught about paying the price. We don't hear stuff like that no more.
It's so true what you're saying. And I think that people used to believe that there was an honor in saying no to free things. And I got a message from a farmer who was talking about this new farm bill that's being introduced into the Senate, in the United States Senate, and it's going to give away free land to people, and in this particular case, it's going to be for black people. And he's saying, you know,
the 40 acres and a mule, we finally getting 40 acres and a mule, is that what it's about?
Well, I think they want to, inflation is now 160 acres that they want to give people.
Right.
But the government's going to buy land, and they're going to give it to a black person. And this person was writing to me, and he said, "They don't understand. If you get land for free, you're not investing in it. You don't know what it takes to really, really make it into a living place and be able to take care of it." But he said that when they were kids, his father taught him that a farmer was too independent and too proud to take something for free.
Right. Wow.
And now every farmer is lining up to get money in the farm bill. It's an attitude of what can we get from the government? What can we possibly get? So you have in the less affluent communities and the poor communities, you have lining up for food stamps, for free medical care, for free housing. And the end result is that it's a whole attitude of slavery, of getting stuff for free, and that then enslaves a person. But we think, when we talk about it, we talk about the welfare people. People think the welfare people are in some sort of form of slavery because they're getting stuff for free.
Right.
But we don't recognize that the rich people also get welfare.
Right, right.
They're talk in the same form that. Of slavery. So the wealthy person has a business. He's getting PPP loans. He's getting these loans from the government. He's getting the Import-Export Bank is giving him money. He's getting all kinds of subsidies for his industry. He is getting, if he's runs a nursing home or a hospital, he's getting all kinds of Medicare payments. It's a whole form of government free money that is being provided to people, and no one wants it touched. If you came and said, you know, really we should go back to a system where the government is not making decisions for people in healthcare, the poor people would say, you can't do that. They want their free healthcare. And the wealthy people that run the hospitals and the nursing homes would be like, you can't do that. We want our Medicare checks every month. And the end result is everyone is on the same system of taking, 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 and no one wants their particular slice of the pie to be touched. And the end result is that the pie keeps getting more and more encompassing. And the end result is that slavery becomes more and more encompassing. And then we end up with, you know, as you said, in this current administration, $7 trillion in new debt for the United States of America, money which does not exist, which is being sent to the people with as check payments. I did not want to deposit a government check. Yeah. I applied for the PPP loans and then decided, once I realized the degree to which they were playing with us, to, you know, the conditions were always changing and all the details were changing, and it wasn't really clear if you have to pay it back, and there's all kinds of complicated rules. And I was like, I'm not getting involved with these people. I am not taking their money. Mm-hmm. I didn't apply for the unemployment disaster, unemployment stuff. Because it's all a mentality of, it's okay for the government to shut everyone down and destroy their businesses as long as they give me something in compensation for them.
But then what they give you to compensate you is minuscule. I mean, think about it. You had people that were getting checks. It was $1,200, right? And that was it. And so what was $1,200 going to do for a family for an entire year after their entire personal economy has been decimated? And so I'm saying, to me, it's almost insanity that for example, if the government says they're going to give me 160 acres for free, I'd be highly suspect. I'm giving them $5, $10, or $15 for it. I'm going to give them something. You know, I'll take the discount on the land, but I'm not going to take it for free, because I know that in our government, there's nothing free. There's nothing free.
But you see what the $1,200 did? It bought a slave mentality.
Wow.
And now, do you realize
that that's powerful, man?
The people that got the $1,200 checks, they're not complaining that their businesses were shut down or they lost their jobs. They're complaining, why isn't the government giving them more $1,200
checks? Another $1,200.
You see, it's an institution of guaranteed minimum wages, which is a form of slavery. And this is what this is what it accomplished. It has accomplished a tremendous amount. The $1,200 was bought a lot more than the $1,200, because it wasn't what you could buy with the $1,200 that you could buy food, or you could buy a flat screen TV, or you could buy something for your clothes for your kids. That wasn't the real purchase for the $1,200. The purchase was the government purchasing the people who received the money.
Wow.
And the government got its money worth for it.
And you believe that there was strategy behind that?
Yes.
Wow. That's deep, because I'm telling you, when you think about it, after the stimulus package was released and disseminated, we're no better off now than we were the day that everybody got their checks.
Well, not no better off. We're much worse off. Wow. Because we've changed the mental. We've taught the government has taught people to accept having their form of livelihood destroyed, and to willingly accept that as long as they get some form of check. Even if the check is only 0.01% of what they would have made. Otherwise, it shows you how cheaply people could be bought. A person could volunteer for slavery, having their business destroyed, having their job being put out of a job for a $1,200 check. That is tragic. It's tragic. It shows up the value that people don't even put on themselves, that they're willing to take $1,200 to give up their lives.
And so let's talk a little bit about affirmative action. I mean, let's go back a few years when it all happened, and what the import of affirmative action was supposed to accomplish, and what it did accomplish, what it didn't accomplish. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as I was sharing with you earlier, now when we think back, now that we've gone through this massive war against humanity, we're in the beginning of it, really, but we see the destruction that has been wrought in our spiritual lives, in our mental health, in our emotional health, and in our physical health, and as both a individuals, families, and also as an economy. I started to think about, well, what are we supposed to do now? We've got to rebuild civilization. We've got to rebuild humanity. Humanity has just suffered a tremendous blow. That's in the Jewish community and every single community. Mm-hmm. So it started to occur to me, it's not just about rebuilding what was, because there was obviously something seriously missing in our education and our spiritual backbone in the beginning of 2020. That which was missing had been eroded over decades. It was missing, and therefore it enabled us to be just allow ourselves to be shut down, allow ourselves to be taken over by fear. So something was missing. So we clearly don't want to go backwards and rebuild what was. We've got to recognize what was missing from humanity, from my spiritual backbone, your spiritual backbone, everyone that exists. What was missing that they were really willing just in an instant to say, hey, okay, you want to close the synagogues? No problem. You want to close the yeshivas? No problem. You want to close the schools, the churches, whatever it is? No opposition. No one had any problem with it. So something's missing. So what's really missing? So I started to think about, well, you know, when the rabbis came, those that survived the Holocaust, they were looking to rebuild Judaism. It occurred to me that they weren't trying to rebuild what was in Europe, because what was in Europe also was not working. There was not the complete engagement. There was people en masse were willing to be pushed around, and so something was missing. So it occurred to me to look back at the Lubavitcher Rebbe's, what he emphasized in trying to put into place the missing building blocks from Judaism that had been missing in the previous generation that allowed it to crumble in on itself. And one of the things that caught my attention, and there's, we could go through many of those points, but one of them was his emphasis not to go to college. Do not go to college. Going to college is actually, and he brought as an example, a way to explain this from the Torah, was going back to Egypt. Paro, he went and he declared that all the Jewish boys had to be drowned. Wow. Now, he said that the Jewish girls could live. Well, the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains that the decree against the Jewish girls was worse than the decree against the Jewish boys.
Why is that? They got to live.
They got to live, but they were going to be raised as Egyptians under Egyptian culture. Wow. In the Egyptian schooling system, the Egyptian university, so to speak. The boy who was drowned, he died a physical death, but he did not die a spiritual death. Just like the slave that you talked about who refused to be a slave, he was never enslaved. He might have been imprisoned, but he was never enslaved.
That's powerful.
So he died a physical death, but he did not die a spiritual death. And the same thing with the Jewish boy who was drowned. He died a physical death, but he did not die a spiritual death. The Jewish girl was raised in an Egyptian corrupted system that's completely against God. And that's a worse fate. That's a spiritual death, even though it's a physical life. So
you're talking about indoctrination.
Yes.
And so that's the key. That's the pinnacle of the experience for those who oppose faith in general, is to re-indoctrinate us with something that serves their ideology about how the world ought to be played out by their terms.
Correct. And Pharaoh wanted to indoctrinate everyone to him that he's the god. He is the ultimate sun god. He is the source of everyone's power. He is the source of all power. This is what he wanted everyone to worship him. This is what the Egyptian indoctrination system was about. And a Jewish person was being raised, Jewish child was being raised to believe in God Almighty, and that no human being is all powerful. No human being is even powerful at all. We're all frail human beings that are here one day and gone the next. So that's what he wanted to eradicate. Now, so the Lubavitcher Rebbe said, don't go to college. God will provide your income. Don't go to college. And some people, of course, just ignored that, because how could you get ahead in America without going to college? But even the people that took him seriously and I think they misunderstood, and I would include myself in that category. Why not go to college? Because it's atheist, so right. That's not a good recipe. The food's not kosher,
right?
Not a good recipe. And there's a mixture of girls and boys. Not a good recipe. There's not going to be appropriate relations. So that's what we all thought, why the Rebbe said don't go to college. But what occurred to me, the insight that really was, I believe, a gift from God on Rosh Hashanah, to see that the Rebbe had a much deeper emphasis, and that was, don't sign up for college. Don't become part of the cult of experts. Wow. University is all about a cult. Like in every cult, there's degrees. So in whether it's the Masons or any cult, you have degrees. In the first degree, second degree, third degree. It's the same thing in college. The university system is set up to decide who's an expert. It's a process of self-ratification of who's the experts. You have bachelor degree, master's degree, PhD, postdoctorate. Right. Then you become a professor, associate, assistant, and so forth, all these different levels. And then if you behave really well, then you can, you know, get a tenured position.
And you get peer-reviewed articles and get $100,000 for writing white papers and all
that. And then you can become a talking person on the news and so forth if you really behave yourself. But the problem is that now you're joining this cult of experts. So this is the real danger. Why the Rebbe is saying don't join this indoctrination system. It's don't go that way. Because once you join it, you become part of it. You think you cannot speak on any subject that you're not degreed in. And you can't speak on any subject that you're not the highest degree in. And you look down at anyone else who's not a degreed in your particular field. Now, because people didn't understand this, some people thought, well, we'll take care of the problem of college by creating Jewish Orthodox colleges. So they created, for example, Toro College. But Toro College is an exact replication of the whole cult of experts, except it serves kosher food, has the boys and girls maybe separate, and maybe some of the professors talk about God, but it's still inculcating the people in the cult of expertise. Mm-hmm. So this was the insight that came to me, was that this is what the Rebbe was working to rebuild Judaism and humanity as a whole, and saying don't go to this cult of expertise. But then that now to you, back to your point about affirmative action. So after kind of letting this sit with me for a couple of months, it occurred to me, well, one second, that was the whole point of affirmative action. The whole point of affirmative action was to take people who did not value as a culture going to university.
Right.
Because they did not buy into the entire cult of experts.
Right.
They did not buy into that you know need to get a piece of paper on the wall and some sort of specialized knowledge to be somebody. They valued themselves as somebodies because of who they were by birth, by their God-given right, as God-given creations of God. They did not value. They say, oh, well, one second. Let's take these people that are not valuing a college education and let's force them into a college and let's get them to be educated, become part of the cult of education, part of the cult of expertise, that they will then now become not only experts, but then they will go back into their home communities and they will preach to them about how they, as simple people who don't go to college, are ignorant.
Wow.
And they better listen to the experts. It's a two-way street. It's taking people and making them, so really making them to the experts and then bringing back into the communities the whole cult of expertise. So now a common man, a common black person who we have to have the highest respect for, because a person who lives according to common sense is the person who God is guiding. He's the person that's listening to his own internal wisdom, whether he's a shoemaker or a farmer,
right,
or a person who has a technical skill, a car mechanic, who's invested in being of service to humanity. He has real wisdom. And it's not adopting someone else's manufactured indoctrination. It's really just an ability to be a human being, a well-grounded human being in God's world. That, I believe, I want to suggest. I want to hear your comments on it. We've already heard one for everyone. Mm-hmm. But that was the goal of affirmative action, was to break that grounding.
Wow.
And say, no, you've got to become like the university-educated types. You've got to break it. We're going to break you into the system. We're going to force you to become like this educated cult of experts. And then you can be unleashed back into the community. To me,
I mean, I'm hearing you and I'm feeling it. That probably was the decimation and the desecration of the entire black community for buying into that. Because prior to that indoctrination, our communities were self-sustaining. We had our businesses. We certainly had God at the center of everything that we did. You see people today in the black community, so few of them will place God at the center of what they do. And in fact, the God that they place at the center of what they do is a very, very paganistic God. It's a very much a God that they're ashamed of if they're in public. And if they're around the experts, they certainly will not invoke the name of God around experts, because it's an embarrassing thing to do. You don't talk about God in front of the experts because, you know, they're atheists, they don't believe in God, and you're not very intellectual if you believe in God. You can't have any mind if you believe in God. That's nonsense. And so many black people have bought into that to their own demise. And here's the problem with that. So in the early 70s, there were 200 people in our prison system in the United States of America. Now in 2020, there's 2.3 million people. Of that, 40% are black people. And of the 40%, 42% are on death row. Now, just think about those statistics. Anybody with any type of semblance of a mind would say that these people are in need of God, like in a hurry. But yet at the same time, we see a moving away from God like never before, and the adopting of this indoctrination of this cult of experts as being the solution, yet our communities are being destroyed, but we don't even recognize it because it's almost like we're under some type of a spell that don't realize that things are not getting better. They're getting categorically worse. But at the same time, you know, we don't need God, but we do need, but if we send you to college, you're going to do all right, right? If you become an expert, you're going to be fine. But what's happened is that it's more so divided of black people, because you have, as they would say in the South, the highfalutin, you know, of black folks that, you know, that feel like they're better than the ones that don't have that education. So now we see almost like a caste system. It's a caste system, and it's a great, great divide. And from hearing what you're saying, I'm really feeling like it was intentional by those that created this system of indoctrination that I don't even believe starts in college. I believe starts in kindergarten. I really believe, probably even before kindergarten, pre-K or Head Start. I believe it starts very, very early on, so that as they become older, they don't resist.